Well may we say God save the Queen, because nothing will save the Governor General.
You know I've searched my heart to prove there's better ways to push and pull. Hey, whatever gets you through these days.
Hello, and welcome to Well May We Say, a progressive podcast about Australian politics. This is episode 58 for Saturday, 30th of June, 2018. I'm Jeremy Sear, and each week I'll be joined by a different guest host to discuss with me what's just been happening to our country, what's about to happen, and hopefully what we can do about it. This week's guest host is Denise Pierco.
Hello again.
Hello. Now, this is probably one of the most profoundly important sort of fortnights that we've had, because this is a repeat of what happened back before we were doing any podcasts, back in 2004, 2005, when the Liberals last ripped a huge amount of revenue out of the budget. And like then, this entire tax cut story has been dealt with by the media as if, you know, if it's about the money you're going to get in your pocket. Okay, look, yes, the rich will eventually get $7,000 and you'll eventually only get $200, but right now you're going to be getting $10 a week in your pocket if you're an average income earner. And let's talk about what they're doing when they use the word average, because they fudged it. And obviously, well, one of the things we need to point out to everybody is that what they refer to as an average middle income earner or an average income earner is not in any way a middle income earner. It's somebody in the top 25% of incomes. But once again, they've ripped all this money out, and all we're getting by way of coverage is, you know, look, you're getting something. I mean, not if you're a poor person, not if you're a new start and you're surviving on $40 a day, you get nothing. But if you're an income earner paying some tax, you're going to get at least a $10 a week tax cut.
That's great, right? $10 a week.
That's better than nothing.
That's like, to listen to someone like Pauline Hanson, that's like three coffees.
Yes, and she was talking about the Hex thing, which is one of the other ways. So the Labor Party's also pointed out that, we'll get to the Hex thing in a second, but yes, that there are other immediate costs that are coming in, like the fact people are about to lose their penalty rates and the fact that the government's just about to massively increase people's Hex repayments at the same time this comes in, which will massively dwarf it. But there's a whole separate question, and I want to start by saying that this should really be the response by Labor and everyone calling on, and including responsible media, which should be, what are they going to cut to pay for it?
Well, that's what I wonder, because they've already been making so many cuts to not only things like New Start, you know, kicking the poor, pensions, that sort of thing, but what about money to hospitals and to healthcare services? Are they going to further cripple in our Medicare system, make it even more two-tier system and make the public system even less workable for those who need it with longer wait times and less available?
Well, their fudge is that technically the money's gone up, although not on a per capita basis.
But well, it hasn't gone up on a per capita.
Population's gone up.
But... And for years, they've been freezing the gap between tests, so it's really impossible. So if you need a CAT scan or an ultrasound to try to get said test, like at a no-fee place, is really hard, and often you have to wait.
So I would have thought that the first thing that anybody should be saying in relation to this, and that's anybody arguing against it, but also anybody covering it competently, is this is $144 billion on their figures. What are they going to cut to pay for it? Where is this magic money coming from? The Liberals run this whole line of, oh, well, you know, we've got to cut things because otherwise, you know, where's the money come from? We'll do the same thing when they cut money out of the budget. Where is the money going to come from? What are they going to cut? That should be being howled back at them, because they're going to.
Yeah.
Like, we know what happened when they got in after the last election into the 2014 budget. So the election in 2013, but the 2014 budget was a brutal budget that ultimately they had to back down from, but they still massively squashed public services. Who on earth thinks that voting for the Liberals this time around in the election that's got to come up before the next budget, what do we think is going to be in the next budget? They're going to have to hit you very hard to pay for this largesse to the very rich.
The thing about it is, and they'll hide some of it, because some of it they'll do is there will be less money going to the states, and then therefore the states have to make choices. It's the states having to cut things, you know, money into various, you know, local court systems or things like that. But they try to pawn it off a little bit too.
Talking of the court system, the federal government has created this giant disaster in the family law system where they don't have enough resources to hear things. And well, The Australian reported this week that in 1 4-day period in Albury, 35 cases were listed for final hearing before a single judge. That is impossible.
That's madness.
It's not uncommon for judges to face court lists of 50 to 70 family law cases in a day. And all the government's doing about family law is merging two courts together. They're not employing more judges. They're not increasing their resources. 35 cases listed for final hearing. Just think about that. A final hearing takes at least half a day.
Yeah.
Probably a day. Basically what that's saying is a whole lot of cases are being listed. People are preparing. So ordering people are running up the costs of preparing for a final hearing, which is very expensive, and then not being reached. They're being told, sorry, you're not going to get a court to deal with it. Try and sort it out yourselves. But of course, if you leave people sorting it out yourselves, because they're not going to resolve, the court is saying, we're not going to adjudicate your dispute. Basically, what you're doing is setting in place a situation where the biggest bully is going to get the outcome that they want.
Mm-hmm.
That's profoundly unjust. The other thing they've also done in the family law space is they've also changed, they've announced they are going to put in the legislation so that people can't cross-examine when they're self-represented litigants. They can't cross-examine the other partner if there's been any allegation of family violence.
Which is a good thing, you would think.
It would be. And it is a good thing in general, and it already is the case in the case of intervention orders and certain things in state courts. But it's not a good thing if the government isn't providing legal aid coverage to actually cover that. So you've basically got poor people who then not only can't afford a lawyer, but also can't actually run their side of a case because they're not allowed to do it themselves. And the government's not proposing to fund any more legal aid. What actually happens at the moment in the state system is that people are forced to have legal aid represent them, but then they're charged by legal aid for it unless they are in the very low means where they can possibly get some assistance, but it's still not complete. So you find people who are very poor, and there's this huge gap between who qualifies for legal aid and who can actually afford it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the problem. There's that gap in a lot of systems. And again, like we're talking about the Medicare system. There's a huge gap in that. There's a gap with people who get concession cards for Medicare systems, so they get extra services covered and they get an extra discount off their drugs and things covered. There's a huge gap between people who qualify for that through Centrelink and people who can actually afford to go pay, you know, $225 up front to have an ultrasound done to get, you know, $90 of it back from Medicare and cover that balance.
So you've got the people that the government's pitching this at. They've got this whole rhetoric about aspiration, and I'm actually going to play you some of their crap in Parliament about aspiration in just a sec. But all of those people, that $10 is not going to cover all of the other money they suddenly have to find.
No, and that's
because they don't qualify for any. They're not on zero income. And the government's talking about aspiration. Well, the biggest disincentive for people working is when you are on New Start or on no money when you're getting some government payments, and for every dollar you earn, you lose like 50 cents. So the biggest disincentive for people doing that extra work, going and doing those extra hours that Malcolm Jones talked about, is the lack of support for people down the very bottom. It's not this idea that Turnbull seems to have that an aged care worker just needs to be thinking about the tax cut they might get if they were on $100,000. They'll be incentivized them to go and get a better job.
Yeah, because
and I'm not kidding about that. He actually will play the aged care quote. In fact, should we play some of these quotes?
Yes, let's play some of the quotes now.
Okay, but just before I play what they were doing, because when they were introducing this into the parliament, they were running very hard on a quote that they wanted to say that Labor doesn't believe in aspiration. So I spent the entire question time bashing Labor because of a quote from Tanya Plibersek. And they quoted this line. They were asking her about aspiration, and she said, look, honestly, this aspiration term, it mystifies me. And that's where they stopped. The government quote, they stopped there. You'll hear them go on about this. Like, no wonder Labor opposes these tax cuts. They don't understand aspiration, and we'll pay them.
Oh, my goodness.
But this is what the full quote is. This aspiration term, not aspiration, this aspiration term, it mystifies me, as if someone on $40,000 a year isn't going to want to earn $100,000 a year because they're going to pay a bit more tax. They're going to get a lot more income, they're going to pay a bit more tax. I think it's just an excuse and a cover for a government that is determined to give the biggest tax cuts to people like them, people that they want to look after at the big end of town. How is it fair that a surgeon on 5 times the income of a nurse gets a 16 times larger tax cut? Is that fair? That's what Tanya actually said.
Yeah.
And that is a totally legitimate point.
That is a legitimate point. And that is saying that she entirely understands aspiration. She knows what it's like, but also that she understands the system that we work in and that we live in. And that is, you just can't go from being the nurse who works at the hospital to being the surgeon and suddenly make that much more money.
Well, and it's not like this whole line that if we give these tax cuts for somebody on 100,000, it's going to be the trigger needed for somebody on 40 to suddenly want to get 100,000. No, a tiny bit of extra tax is not the disincentive there.
No.
It's the fact that the system doesn't actually let you
It's the education you need. It's the system. It's the fact that you have to work through a system. It's the fact that there's limited jobs. The jobs aren't necessarily available. It's the fact that a lot of these roles, for example, nursing is considered a women's position. So nursing and midwifery and that sort of thing are paid a lot less than they probably should be if it was a predominantly male-oriented field. And so you have these situations where people who are highly educated and have a lot of HECS debt, in order to proceed anymore, they would have to go and get more of this HECS debt.
Or there isn't a path for them to proceed. Oh, yeah. Aged care workers, childcare workers, there are plenty of people on low incomes. It doesn't matter how much harder they work and how many more hours they do, as if they weren't doing lots of hours and lots of hard work already. There isn't a career path where they get $200,000. There is no childcare worker, no matter how great they are at childcare working, who's on $200,000.
I know someone who's managing a center, a friend's daughter, who has been, you know, stepping up to manage the center while the manager wasn't there, who got like a couple dollar an hour raise, and her mother was barracking for her to, you know, to push for more, because looking at everything she's doing, she's working 60 hours a week, she's doing all the rostering, she's doing all of this stuff, and they offered her very generously $2 an hour extra. So she's gone up from being like on under $30,000 a year to being just over $30,000 a year. And she's managing a childcare center in a very posh neighborhood with kids who are all going to go to very expensive private schools.
Yeah, it's insane. I've got quotes from how the crappy news media were covering it and all the rest of it. But you know what? Let's actually just play the bit where Malcolm Turnbull basically declares that people doing these really necessary roles, like aged care, childcare, all these sort of, people doing those roles, they should just, you know, they should
get another job.
Get another job. All right. So this is Shorten asking Turnbull about his weird idea of aspiration, where people only need a tax cut for the rich in order to make it worth their while to work harder and get more money, and Turnbull's weird idea that what the solution for people in these poorly paid sectors is to just give up their job and do something else that pays more.
Obviously.
Questions to the Prime Minister. I refer to the Prime Minister's earlier answer when he said that his government rewards aspiration. So under this Prime Minister, should a 60-year-old aged care worker from Burnie aspire to be an investment banker from Rose Bay, just so instead of their $10 a week tax cut from the Prime Minister, they can get the Prime Minister's $7,000 a year tax cut for investment bankers?
Members on my right, the Minister for Home Affairs. The Prime Minister has the call.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Member should remember that the 60-year-old aged care worker in Burnie is entitled to aspire to get a better job, is entitled to get a promotion.
Oh, wow.
Members on my left.
Is entitled to be able to earn more money. And no, aged care working in aged care is a good job.
hang on. Turnbull at that point has realised what he said and how that's going to play.
Oh, wow. And, like, that's the thing. What he's also talking about, he's talking about someone who's been in the industry. Shorten's talking about someone that he's used a specific example, a 60-year-old aged care worker. This is not someone who can retrain. This is not someone who's going to be immensely hireable. All of the statistics show...
Well, not in a different industry that pays more, no.
Not even in the same industry, to be honest. They have shown through many, many statistics and many studies that if you put an older person and a younger person against each other in a job interview, the younger person's is often likely to get the job when you hit that past 50 age gap.
Of course, because any business is going to rationalize that after they train the person to fit into their business, then they're going to be there for longer, presumably, than somebody who's, you know, 60 and is only under this government, you know, 30 or 40 years from retirement.
Oh, exactly. I did actually see a lot of comments on Twitter after this from aged care workers saying that they are actually scared for what happens to them when they're 60 because they're not sure they can still keep doing the job, because the job often involves lifting residents, the people in their care, you know, shifting them from beds to chairs to showers, and that they might not actually, that their bodies have taken a massive beating and they might not have the physical ability to continue to do their job at 60.
That is the classic thing of a lot of the areas of work that are necessary as society relies on them. But are poorly paid. They're also often the ones where it harms your body. Imagine the delusion of the Prime Minister saying that a 60-year-old aged care worker from Burnie, A, can at 60 just retrain and get a better... Suddenly, there's something they can do to get paid a decent wage.
Yeah. Or can just get a promotion. Well,
to what?
If you... That's the thing. Like, even if you look in a sort of system like an aged care home, say you have 20 aged care workers, and then you have 2 to 3 supervisors, and then you have one manager. Like, it's a triangle. It's not like every person's just going to be able to step up.
And also, that... I mean, their whole line is that it's these tax cuts that will provide that aspiration.
Oh, yeah.
And that, what? So somebody, does Turnbull imagine that somebody on a low income is thinking, well, I'd like to earn a bit more money, but, you know, there's the fact that on that higher income, that extra money that comes in, I may have to pay, you know, 37 cents in the dollar on that amount.
I'll still earn more, and I'll still come home with more money, and I'll still be able to afford more, but I'm not going to go for that because of that new tax
rate. Extra 5 cents or whatever, yeah, in the dollar. That's mad. Nobody thinks like that. And that's what Tanya was saying. She was saying, as if anybody on 40,000 isn't going to want to earn 100,000 because they'd have to pay a bit more tax.
Yeah.
That's nonsense. The only way the government gets away with this line is by confusing people about what progressive tax break.
Yes.
The progressive taxation system works and how the tax brackets work. And in fact, I'm going to come to that in a second. I want to finish off Turnbull's ranting about it as he tries to go, oh, hang on, I think I've just
tried. Does he try to claw it back a bit?
Yeah, he does a bit. Labour are cackling at this point because they're like, oh, good, you've given us the quote we needed.
The leader of the opposition will cease interjecting.
He's throughout lots of people, the Speaker, in this.
That's right, Mr. Speaker. Every worker, every Australian is entitled to aspire to earn a better income. That's, Mr. Speaker.
Why do they need tax cuts to aspire?
Everyone is entitled to aspire to that. It's the Labor Party that seeks to hold them back.
The problem.
The aged care worker in Burnie. May get another job. And they will know that they will not pay any more than 32.5 cents of the dollar in extra, in every dollar of extra income.
And that's really what they're thinking about. Right, just a delusional idea that the only thing, way that you can, the only reason why people would seek to do better is if they're not having to pay tax.
The other thing is that messed up idea of people seeking to do better, that no one should want to do these jobs. No one should want to be an aged care worker. No one should want to be a child care worker. No one should want to be a sanitation worker who picks up your trash every on the weekly, or work for city council walking the streets picking up the garbage. You know, these are jobs people have to do. These are jobs that we have built our society on people performing these roles. And without them performing them, everything breaks down. If childcare workers stopped working because they said, this is unconscionable, you pay us nowhere near enough money, we're pretty much teaching your children, treat us better. If teachers stopped working for similar reasons, if any of these things stopped happening, we'd be screwed.
Well, it's like the line when they talk about, there was a minor increase in the minimum wage recently, and you had all these commenters on News Limited website saying, well, it's not supposed to be a good wage. When they're saying it needs to at least be a livable wage, they're like, no, it doesn't. It's supposed to be incentive to go and get a better job. Well, hang on. So what you're saying is, for all of the thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of Australians who have to do those jobs, like, you're not saying that those jobs don't need to be done.
Yeah.
What you're saying is there is a class of people permanently, whether or not an individual goes out of that and somehow gets a better job, somebody still needs to do that job. And what you're saying is, I want there to be a set of people who are working permanently. I want them to be working full-time hours for less than a livable wage.
I'd be interested to see them, you know, do without janitors and do without people making their coffee and do without these things.
Why should somebody who's... These are necessary roles.
Oh, absolutely.
And people are like, oh, well, you know, it's your fault for not going to uni. Well, first of all, we'll get back to how uni...
That's interesting, isn't it? Because what he's saying is you should aspire and you should do better. And one of the things they sell is, in order to aspire and do better, you should go to university. One of the things they did for a few years in this country was, for a very few years, and people like Malcolm benefited from
education.
Free education. Then they brought in a delayed debt system. Basically, you had to pay for your education, but it was delayed until after you finished working. So after you finished your education, you started working. And when you're making a certain amount.
Because the rationale is you're going to benefit from it by earning a higher wage. Absolutely. Therefore, at that point, you can put it back. Now, that's stupid. You're better off to just tax people, and we should all be funding the universities. But then they did a few other things.
Like the numbers going to universities increased. The amount of funding they're giving to universities has decreased, so they've had to increase the fees they're charging to students. And suddenly, they're very surprised that the amount of debt being held in the HECS and HELP system has gone up.
Which shouldn't be debt at all. Like, it should have just been money the government paid for the tertiary system. Like,
yes.
It shouldn't.
It's an investment.
That's right. The idea that this is should be a public expenditure, and we've turned it into a bunch of private debts. But yeah, so they've turned around and they've been like, not only are people, so this week they're voting this in Parliament, and Pauline Hanson's saying somebody on $45,000, so $750 a week, should be able to find $8, which is the start amount to pay back their HECS. Just a couple of coffees. What, I don't know how they think somebody is on $45,000, it's on $750 a week, is surviving after they pay rent to start.
Yeah, if you're living in a capital city, especially if you're living in Melbourne or Sydney or Brisbane, where you're paying between like $250 and $350 a week in rent, plus you're paying for your travel pass. So there's another like $40-$50 a week, depending on where you live. And if you live further out, it's more. You're buying groceries. And you know what? If you have the disposable income after that to buy a coffee in the morning as a thing for yourself, then go for it. I think you should be able to buy a coffee. I don't think we should be taking that small thing. But so many people who are in that position don't even have that pleasure. They don't even have the disposable income to be able to do that. They're budgeting, you know, they're making their coffee at home and bringing it in their keep cup.
Well, the government's busy telling us that people, in relation to justifying their tax cuts, that some $120,000 is a middle income, when the average is like, we'll get the numbers, the average is like 70 or 80 or something, but the median is more like 50 or 60. So, but somebody on 45 is even less than the median. Like, these are people who are not benefiting financially from their university education. They are probably doing things like childcare. If they're getting to use their university, they're doing necessary jobs that we need them to do.
That's really interesting, because I was looking at some numbers and they're saying that of the graduates leaving high school, 70% of them are employed full time, but only 40 to 50% of those are actually employed in a field that is relevant to their workplace. You're looking at 30% of graduates who aren't even employed full time. They might be employed part time. They might have a couple part time jobs. You're looking at least half of those people who aren't even working in their field, who might be working in hospitality, might be working in some other thing just to get a job, to pay the bills and to live and to exist. And those are people who are going to be hit by that.
Well, that's right, because when they lower the threshold down, they're lowering it this week from $56,000 to $45,000. So we're not talking about rich people. We're talking about, so this lowering of the threshold is affecting precisely the people from 45 to 56. So the people in that income bracket, which
that's
is a
massive,
very low income bracket. So the current figures, so the full average full-time annual earnings are 81,000. Median are 65.5, and it's less for women. Women, it's the median worker, and then that's for people who are full-time employed.
Yeah.
The median income for all workers is 52, which is paltry. So all these people who are supposedly getting $10 a week back, if you've got a uni debt, you're immediately
$8 if that's going to uni.
Yeah. Plus, if you're losing your penalty rates. Oh, I want to play you how they respond to the penalty rates, because they've got a line about this. And remember before we play this, what the SDA is. The SDA is a union we have regularly criticised in this podcast and everywhere else. The SDA was the union, the anti-gay union, the Catholic, the Joe de Bruin union that had all these ridiculous powers over the ALP because of the number of members, because it covered retail and hospitality workers.
Yes. And they also had a lot of power within the grocery business. So they had a lot of buy-in from, they had a lot of members from like Woolworths.
Yeah. So basically.
If people tried to bring in any other unions, they're pretty much getting scared out or like losing all their shifts.
Commonwealth won't let other unions talk to their staff.
Yeah, so they were only allowed this union that's pretty much on their side.
Yeah, so the SDA was a totally tame employers union. And the deal for the SDA was employers signed their workers up to the SDA. You went to work for McDonald's, KFC, Coles, whatever. They signed you up to the union. They signed you up to the union because it was a totally tame union. And that was a union that had sold off a lot of its workers' actual rights. And it was able to do that under the Howard government's changes and then the very lame back fix.
The old system where an enterprise agreement didn't actually have to enterprise agreements that have to hit a bar currently, then that bar is supposed to be that it will not leave you worse off than the award.
And it will actually
improve the award situation for you.
And the SGA negotiated to get rid of people's penalty rates and all sorts of things in a deal which has later been found to be worse than the award.
Yes.
Now, the SGA was such a right-wing union that when they did the Trade Union Royal Commission, the Libs, to try and bash the ALP, they specifically excluded the SGA.
Oh, God.
And the Liberals regularly talk about the SGA as their model of what a union should be, because it's completely tame and doesn't stand up to employers. And in fact, it has this cosy relationship where the employers help the SGA out by giving it members, which gives it power, which it then used mainly to oppose gay marriage. And the SGA pays back the employers by being completely useless.
Yes.
So keep in mind that history, given this answer and this question and this answer.
Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Prime Minister. Can this arrogant and out-of-touch Prime Minister confirm that under his government's tax policies, an investment banker from Woollahra earning $1 million a year will get a tax cut of over $7,000 a year? The bank will get a company tax cut with $17 billion going to the big banks, but a shop assistant from Caboolture will only get a tax cut of $10 a week, and that's before they lose up to $77 in penalty rates.
The Prime Minister has the call.
Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for raising the subject of penalty rates, because he's sitting with a group of Olympic class champions at getting rid of penalty rates, trading them away one after the other. How many students working on weekends at McDonald's don't get any penalty rates at all because of the agreement entered into by their union? Oh, yes.
The member for Redcliffe.
Not a cut. They get nothing. The Labor Party has failed those workers. And you know what, Mr. Speaker?
The Prime Minister will resume his seat for a second. Okay, well, you've just jumped the queue. The member for Morton can leave under 94A. And the member for Lawler, who's been warned, can leave.
I mean, Turnbull's right. The SGA did sell out workers, and the ALP covered for them for far too long.
Thank you.
But
thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Because they weren't a very good
union. Under our personal income tax plan, people on the higher tax bracket of $200,000 plus will pay a larger share of total income tax.
So this is their other line. Their other line is, and this is one that the IPA and News Limited and the Australian, everybody have been running quite hard. They're like, the tax cuts for the rich can't be unfair when the rich are still paying such a large proportion of the total tax take. The problem with that argument is that if you think about it for a second, why are the rich paying collectively, like, so this top percent of earners are paying this percentage of the overall budget? The only reason they would be doing that is if income inequality has risen so dramatically that, because the only reason you're paying a huge chunk as a small number of people is if you, as a small number of people, have a huge chunk of the wealth.
Yeah.
A huge chunk of the income. If we had a more equitable system, the rich would be paying a lower overall percentage of the tax take because they wouldn't be, because there wouldn't be this huge disparity in the amount of money that they have compared with ordinary workers. The reason why the average income is so much higher than the median is because we have this huge skew to a very small percentage at the very top who are on obscene amounts of money. And yes, that means that they end up paying overall a larger overall chunk of the tax take. But compared with the amount of money they've got, it's a decreasing amount because they, with these tax cuts.
Yes.
Like individually, they'll be paying less, but because their overall money, because they're overall so stupidly wealthy, it's that's why that overall argument doesn't work, because that is actually a demonstration of how unfairly the proceeds of the nation's wealth and productivity are actually divided. And again, I go back to the aged care worker. They are just as productive. They are working just as hard. They are working. The childcare worker has to have qualifications.
Yes.
The aged care worker now has to have qualifications. But even the idea that if you don't have qualifications, you shouldn't be paid very much is nonsense, because you're paying in another way. You're paying with, like, your time.
Yeah, your time and your labor, your effort, what you do,
your body.
Spending time, is worth value. The time you spend away from your family, away from your friends, away from all of that, doing, performing a service or a making a good for some other person is worth something.
Yes, and it's worth more than it gets.
Yes.
Recompensed.
So looking at the penalty rates, the big change this year that goes into effect this Sunday is that retail and pharmacy penalty rates are going down 15% on Sundays.
Yeah, which is vastly more than any tax cut.
And fast food and hospitality are going down 10%.
That Turnbull is right. That in a lot of the big companies that deal with the SDA, those have already been lost.
Yes.
That's true. And it's an outrage. And it's something that should be undone. And for this government to be turning around and saying that union over there was too tame, when they're in the, everything this government has done about unions has been trying to restrict their ability to bargain, their ability to stand up for workers. If we had proper union protections, then the alternative union to the SDA would be able to enter.
Yeah.
Woolworths would be able to enter. Coles and Woolworths would not be able to prevent unions from entering their workplace. A proper union that would actually defend those workers would be able to talk with those workers, and if they have something if the workers agree that they're being exploited and would like to have a union representative. For the government to be like, those unions are too tame, when they've done everything in their power to rip the teeth out of unions,
yes,
is staggeringly insincere and hypocritical. For Turnbull to be standing up there and saying, my tax cuts for the rich are progressive because the rich are so much richer that they're paying they're paying a big chunk because, you know, no matter what the rates are, it's too many people, you know, lots of people are very poor. Or for him to be saying, the unions, I'm really on the side of the workers because that really tame union has nothing to do with me, except it really does because it's your party's complete hobbling of unions.
Absolutely.
That have led to this situation.
The thing about this is, though, so these cuts aren't the last cuts. Next year, there will be an additional cut to hospitality, fast food, pharmacy and retail. And the year after, there will be another cut to pharmacy and retail. Hospitality and fast food will have leveled by then. So it's a drastic, like 10 to 15% a year. And a lot of people budget for that. They need those Sunday shifts. They need those shifts to help balance the work. And the concept of penalty rates is the idea that we are asking someone to give up the weekend. You know, we are asking someone to make it more convenient for the rest of us. The rest of us who work Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, we're asking them to not see their family, to not do these things while kids aren't at school and they're home, to not, you know, to not spend time with parents or siblings or spouses who might work Monday to Friday, which, you know, quote unquote, the majority of people do. We're asking people to work these shifts so our lives are more convenient. And that's part of what penalty rates are about. They're about, they get paid more for doing that. It's the same as public holiday rates.
Well, it's not like they're increasing the salary, the hourly rates at the other times. They're just a cut.
Exactly.
And one of the big arguments that have been coming out this week throughout both in Parliament and the way they're selling it is this line, and Craig Londey was saying it to Alice Workman on the BuzzFeed one, and they repeated this line. What young people need to understand is that the stronger your boss, the stronger your boss's company, the better off they are, the better off you are. And I have to say that most young people, their experience of their employer has not been, the stronger my employer is, the better my rights are. Because
I'm pretty sure it's the opposite.
Yes. The other argument the government's coming out, and choose your own adventure. Do you want to next the other justification they're giving for the cuts, or do you want to have a listen to how they're infuriatingly trying to run the aspiration? Or option C, do you want to hear who Turnbull think are ordinary workers? Like what they found is there examples of ordinary workers who are going to benefit?
I want to hear who Turnbull thinks ordinary workers are.
All right, good to go. Okay, well, so this isn't an answer to a question from Chris Bowen.
Why won't the Prime Minister support Labor's plan to give 70% of working Australians a bigger, better, fairer tax cut compared to stages 1, 2, and 3 of the government scheme?
The Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, the government's personal income tax plan rewards aspiration. It encourages Australians to get on
Member for
and
Lindsay.
Have a go. It gets rid of bracket creep. Across that huge spectrum of incomes,
yeah, I'll talk about
between 41,000 and 200,000, 94% of Australians won't have to pay more than 32.5 cents in any extra dollar. But Mr. Speaker, I'll give three additional reasons why Labor's plan lets down hard-working Australians on middle incomes. A police sergeant in Queensland.
A police sergeant.
Perhaps. Would pay under Labor's alternative, $1,253 more tax. Or a school principal in Tasmania.
Not a school teacher, a principal.
Would pay an extra $3,500 more tax. Or a police inspector.
An inspector?
I do it working in Mayo. Would pay $4,050 more tax. The Labour Party talks about millionaires and billionaires paying no little attention to the reality that everything they are doing is patronising and seeking to hold back hard-working Australians who want to get ahead. Only the most arrogant and out of touch.
Okay. I find it interesting that the school principal is held up. They do understand that, like, a school has one principal and dozens of teachers.
Yes.
It's not the police, our officer. It's not the person who's starting in the police who's, like, walking on the streets. It's the sergeant.
Yeah, they make up three. So the school principal, according to Greg Jericho, had a look at this in the Guardian. They make up 3.5% of all teachers in primary and secondary schools. They earn a hell of a lot more money compared to the rest. Their average taxable income is $115,000 compared with the average taxable income for an early childhood teacher of $50,000.
So, and the average tax of a primary school teacher, which is
$64,000.
Yeah.
So many of them. So 31% of them are claiming a dividend franking credit, so they've got shares, and 26% of them are negative gearing, and then the figures for all the rest of the teachers are very small indeed. Yeah, that is a tiny number of people, and 115 is, as we said, more than double the median wage. So that's your sympathetic example.
Oh God, they're such idiots.
But I mean, to be fair, like, it's hard to sell what they're. Because what they're doing is a massive transfer of wealth from the poor to the rich.
Yes.
And I've just at this point hammered something that I want to hammer a lot. And I really want... It annoys me that the ALP haven't been hammering this. But really, I think the biggest response to this needs to be, from the very beginning, it's not the amount of the tax cut, although that's profoundly unjust. It's where that money is coming from.
Yeah.
And we're not having... I have not seen in any of the media coverage, and I'll play you some of it, but... When they talk about these tax cuts and they talk, it's like, what are you going to get? At no point do they tell you what you're going to lose.
Yeah.
Because the government's not telling us what you're going to lose. And the journalists aren't asking them, what are you going to cut to pay for it? Because if the money's got to come from somewhere.
Well, they're going to get $245 million through HECS.
Yes. So the government reckons that it's going to get $245 million from reducing the HECS threshold from the 56 to 45.
Yeah.
So let's be clear about what that means. That means that... For those people on low incomes, below average incomes, the government's plan...
And below median incomes as well.
Yeah. The government's plan to make $240 million is to grind it out of those people from 45 to 56,000. So they're talking about aspiration. What they're proposing to do is squeeze the people who are working, full-time workers, working to try and get ahead... And they're going to squeeze them into the ground to get $240. They reckon they can get $240 million out of
it. Well, apparently their original suggestion was to lower it to $42,000. And that did not get enough approval in their crossbenchers in the Senate. But people like Pauline want to reduce it to $30,000.
Because she hates university graduates. Actually, okay, now is probably the time that I should play some of the chunks of how the government was running this aspiration thing and attacking the ALP and saying that the ALP doesn't understand aspiration. We're really for the poor by giving them a tiny tax cut. What we're doing when we're really nice to the rich is we're really helping the poor aspire to be better.
Yes.
Like, it's just bonkers. But remembering, I'll just read out what Tanya said again before I play all the coalition government hammering the first sentence. Honestly, this aspiration term, it mystifies me. As if someone on $40,000 a year isn't going to want to earn $100,000 a year because they're going to pay a bit more tax. They're going to get a lot more income. They're going to pay a bit more tax. I think it's just an excuse and a cover for a government that is determined to give the biggest tax cuts to people like them, people that they want to look after at the big end of town. How is it fair that a surgeon on five times the income of a nurse gets a 16 times larger tax cut? Is that fair? You will not be surprised that end part of that quote is not the part that the government is hammering. So, question time starts with this.
The Prime Minister has the call. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We are a government that believes in Australians' enterprise and their aspiration. We believe Australians should be entitled to aspire to get in their lives.
But, like, investing money is the only kind of aspiration that Turnbull understands.
Oh, my dream of owning a negative gear department.
Well, now there's tax cuts for the rich, you'll be able to do it somehow.
To enable you to do your best, to realise your dreams, to aspire and to get ahead. You'd think that was pretty straightforward. You'd think that every Australian would embrace that, Mr. Speaker, but not the Lindsay leader.
The idea of aspiration, but I don't see how it's helped by giving the rich more.
Today she said, honestly, she said, this aspiration term, it mystifies me.
So all of the government members on that day, which was the 19th of June, ran this line. So what's happening right now is Tanya Plibersek is standing up and trying to go to the dispatch box and saying, I want to tender the transcript with the full quote.
I'm seeking leave to table a document.
No, you cannot do that in the middle of an answer. It's very clear in the standing orders. The member for Sydney will resume.
So she sits back down, and then after the answer, she goes to try and table it, and he then kicks her out of the chamber.
Aspirationally to people and to fashion policies to meet those aspirations. Well, there's no reason why they've, no doubt, why they've lost the ability to do so, because it's all a mystery.
That's not why. Oh. That's not what she said, Malcolm, you lying son of a bitch.
I wonder what his household income is.
Oh, let's see. Oh, we're going to talk about his supposed donation to charity too. People can aspire to that even without giving rich people a tax cut. It's not what you stand for. You stand for transferring money away from the people who might aspire. And making it harder. But hang on. I'll talk about the elites and the ladders in a second.
Oh my god.
He's attacking. How many people in the Liberal Party front bench were not university educated? Privileged class.
Wow.
They want to kick the ladder out from underneath them. Okay, so this is the standard attack on anybody from the progressive side of politics who is privileged. It's basically the you are a class traitor attack.
Oh, they basically say they want people to aspire, they want people to do better, they want people to get better jobs. But anyone who has, you know, done better, who has gotten a better job, who has educated themselves, and again, I use the word better very tenuously. I use it on their terms, not what I necessarily believe. But anyone who has done these things, they then attack.
Well, the argument is you can't, as a person who has stuff, advocate for the poor because it's hypocritical. Like, so for some reason, the argument is that you're... The only principal thing for a rich person to do is to advocate for their own self-interest, which
is bonkers. So basically, you have to give up all of your worldly possessions, go start living in a box on the street, and then you can advocate for the poor.
Yes, although you still probably don't really understand them because of your privilege that you started with. But yeah, like it's.
Do you have common people going through your head?
It's very convenient because basically what it means is you have to get rid of all of the things that you might need to, like you need money to be able to advocate for in this immediate environment. Like you need to get rid of all of the ability to do that, and then you have the authority.
It's the idea that, like, you know, when you have the privilege, you use that privilege to benefit other people, to benefit people who don't have that privilege. And that's what they're fighting against. They're basically, wow.
Well, they don't grasp the idea. Like, it's why would you... There must be an angle in it. It's this whole idea behind the attack of virtue signalling. The right often attacks people on they must be getting something out of it. The idea that they attack refugee lawyers, like, they must be making money out of refugees. Julian Burnside, you must be making a fortune. No! Refugees don't have money. They're not paying. They are not. Julian Burnside would be making a lot more money if he was doing what he was doing, which was he's a QC. He'd be charging a fortune doing commercial cases. Yes. He's not making money out of refugees.
Yeah.
The idea is it's almost foreign. But I suppose because I think you can come back to me if you've got an argument against this. But I'm anybody listening to this who thinks this is an unfair characterization. But it really seems to me that the fundamental difference between a conservative person and a liberal-minded person is empathy. As the ability is care,
and that's what I've seen a lot going around from a lot of American friends on things like Facebook right now, which is that there's an article about I can't teach you empathy. Like, if you think that kicking refugees and kicking the poor and kicking all of these things is okay, then like we have a fundamental issue because I can't teach you empathy.
Well, it's the idea that you might be doing something for someone else for altruistic reasons. Like the virtue signaling bit is I can't believe that somebody would be doing something virtuous for its own sake because they care, because they have a conscience. They must be doing it to get some benefit, for a PR benefit or something. Like, for example, Malcolm Turnbull. So one of the things that happened after the tax cuts passed, Labor, because obviously we've got the by-elections coming up, which, of course, there are only a lose. Labor can only do the same or worse because they're all Labor seats.
Yeah.
Because of the absolute bonkers nature of Section 44 in a multicultural society where you have to renounce your dual citizenship and to an obscene, an absurd level, according to the way the High Court has upheld that
it
section.
It really has been, yeah.
And the Liberals are opposing actually fixing it despite what the bipartisan committee recommended, because it needs to be fixed. It's absolutely insane that in 2018 Australia, people have to give up dual citizenship and have to jump through ridiculous hoops in order to be able to be representatives in our parliament that's supposed to represent all of us, including people who are dual citizens. Like,
yay!
There are migrant communities where people don't want to give up their connection to their country of birth or their family's country or something, and shouldn't have
enough.
To. But anyway, so those by-elections, obviously, because they're Labor seats, Labor either retains them, in which case it's the status quo, or loses one or two of them, which is a problem. So, like, it's rubbish. It's a rubbish situation for them. But Labor's been running some ads basically saying, look, Malcolm Turnbull's going to be making this much money out of them as opposed to ordinary workers. Now, I don't think that's their strongest point. I think Labor should be running arguments of the government is giving $7,000 a year to the very rich. It's going to cost $144 billion. Where's that money coming from? What thing that you like are they going to cut? Like, that would, I would say, would be a much better attack. But anyway, they ran this campaign. And so in response to what the coalition refers to, and even the ABC is now calling this class war and the politics of envy, ridiculous right-wing lines that no neutral news organisation should be repeating. Because fighting against giving more money to the rich and taking it from the poor is no more class war than the rich doing it to in the first place. Like, the rich going, we need tax cuts and it's got to be ripped out of, you know, the making people on Newstart starve even more. Like, that's class war. It's not just class war when it's the people at the bottom going, oi, that thing, I've just noticed what you're doing. Like, that's...
I like the accent that came with that.
I regret having done that. it's my Mac at the bottom of Yertle's stack of turtles.
Oh, I recognise it well.
You know what? Yertle the Turtle is an important tale about the workers rising up against the people stacking them in a giant pile so that they can rule over cats and blueberry bushes. It's an important message. Anyway, that's no more class war. And the politics of envy is a fantastic argument when you're going to people who are obscenely rich and saying, oi, stop ripping us off.
Yeah.
It's not because I envy you and I want to be you. And it's like, it's just obscene. Like, if somebody's stealing stuff from you, you're going, you're envying me getting the stuff that I just nicked off you.
Yes.
Anyway, so Labor had a campaign that they were running up, making the point about how much Turnbull was going to make out of it. And so Turnbull responded by going, fine, I'll donate my salary to charity.
Yes.
Now, first of all, if you're rich enough to be able to donate something like $500,000 before tax to charity, still not an ordinary person. Like,
no,
most of us are not going to see $500,000 in a lifetime, or at least not in many, many, many decades.
Yes.
Young people in a lifetime, older people, well, I suppose older people, it's half a house now. Huh. If they're sitting on a house from earlier, it's, you know, what $500,000 wouldn't even buy you a shack on fire in a swamp?
But the fact is, if I had $500,000 and if I had enough money that I had $500,000 to give away, my God.
You're not like folk. You're insanely wealthy. But,
oh, he's a battler.
But he's not pretending that. He's like, his line is that I've had a go, and it's the kind of thing that we should be encouraging people to do. People should just, you know, inherit money that they can then invest and make a lot of money. I mean, if only the rest of us thought of inheriting money. Anyway, but where's he donating it to? What is this charity?
Yeah.
The charity is the Turnbull Foundation, which is completely opaque. We don't know where that money goes. We don't know charities benefit from it. He is a director. It's basically a brilliant system for funneling money in that is really opaque to the tax office.
It becomes like another negative gearing situation, because now you've made this massive charitable donation to a charitable foundation, which reduces your tax burden again.
But also the money in the charity, like, it only has to donate, I think it's like 10-15% to actual external things that you can observe. And the rest of it gets, it's basically this opaque money pit, which is handy. He can get director's fees, he can get travel, he can get, there's lots of things that you can do with it. There's lots of expenditure in
these. That's horrifying.
Yeah. So when he says, I've donated it to charity, very few people, like the Independent Australia people, are trying to dig into it. But I haven't seen any other journos. Like, the Daily Telegraph ran this as this breathtaking thing of, oh, you see, Labor can't run an attack like that on Turnbull because he's giving all his money away.
He's a saint.
He's a hero, yeah.
He's a saint.
But is he, like, who is who are the ordinary people who are benefiting from this? And also, fundamentally, the charity model of supporting the poor is a rubbish model.
Oh, it is. It is. It's, first of all, you take any onus off the state to support the poor. Every time you kick the poor, these charities have to come in and work even harder. And unfortunately, in the way it works, is a lot of them are religious-based and a lot of them are religious-focused, because it's part of their sort of religious mantra that they help the poor, that they do more for the poor. So they... beneficial.
Of course, a lot of the religions get tax-free status as a religion, even if you don't actually do any charity.
Yeah,
religion
that's true.
In and of itself.
And you know, it's one of those things. It's great that the Salvation Army provides stuff for struggling kids at school and helps them get school uniforms and helps people with food banks and things. But like, don't be a queer couple trying to go to them.
No.
Also take that money and they lobby like against those rights at the government level.
Also, they are monsters with bullying old people into stealing their estates. Like,
yeah,
they get something vulnerable and then they...
brutal.
Yeah, the salvos are quite... And also, even when they do services like the drug service, the cleans process, so basically you have situations where people have committed a petty crime, they're at court, they've got a drug problem. The choice they're given is you can have bail, but only if you go off and do this drug treatment program run by the salvos, where you're going to be in a remote location, indoctrinated with their religion, isolated from everywhere else, basically at a vulnerable time in your life, pressured into joining their religion, and with the power of the state, is your choice is that
or prison
or jail while you wait to have your matter heard.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have that issue. Oh God, yeah, like it's terrifying, isn't it?
Apart from anything else, when you're at the level of wealth of Turnbull, he doesn't need this $7,000, but nor do any of the other rich people. Like that money isn't going to go back into the community. It's not going to be It's not going to incentivize people to work harder. Like somebody on $200,000 is going to work a bit harder for the extra $7,000. It won't change their behavior. It's just more money for the rich. And Turnbull doesn't need it. Turnbull wouldn't even notice it. But it's a huge chunk out of the budget, so it will be noticed to people where that money would have otherwise gone if it was being spent in a socially responsible way. I think that the fundamental thing is that it's just at a certain level of wealth, it's just greed. You just want more. And Turnbull wants to be, it's his class. He may have to temporarily sacrifice his own income to do it, but, you know, that'll help him going forward. But Turnbull spent, $1.7 million of his own money to help the Liberals win the last election.
Yeah.
Like, he's obviously, at the moment, he's not focused on his own money. He wants power. But giving money to the rich and staying in their good books is something that's certainly helpful to him personally. And also, it's part of his philosophy. Like, if you're at a certain level of obscene wealth, you want, if something is going to go back to the poor, you want it to be on your own terms, in your own way, at your own discretion. You want the poor to be grateful to you. You want to be able to go, no, I'm not going to, or I will do it.
But depending that's what on it, where is. They it is.
Dance
it
for
is.
The money. Dance for the money, rather than it being...
It is always the grateful poor, though. That's what they want. They want the grateful poor. They want the polite poor. It's like the idea of protesting, you know. You protest in the way that's acceptable. You do in a way that doesn't bother them, that doesn't bother their system.
That's right. I mean, charity's always been this justification for the rich being obscenely wealthy. They're like, oh, well, if we weren't as obscenely wealthy, then we wouldn't be able to give anything back. But all the rest of us are not better off because you're obscenely wealthy. Like, you're still stealing you're getting a huge chunk of the pie, and you're giving some of it back, you know, arbitrarily. But if it was being distributed in a reasonable way, you wouldn't have that huge chunk in the first place.
Yep.
It would be, like, you'd still be better off than average if you've worked hard and done something. Like, there's still plenty of room for aspiration. It doesn't need to be at the obscene levels.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. So he bangs on about that. He bangs on about the hopes and dreams. But the other justification they gave, which is how they're trying to argue that this is a plan. It's not just a giveaway to the rich. So this is Morrison giving his justification for why these cuts needed to happen. And remember, these aren't just moving the tax brackets. They're abolishing tax rates.
Yes.
And inflation is not, you know, 75,000 to 90,000 in the next year or two. Like, that is, inflation is not going at that rate.
Yes.
So this is Morrison's justification.
In the budget, we announced a comprehensive and responsible plan for personal tax reform, Mr. Speaker.
It would be responsible if you told us where the money was coming from.
Is when you're actually dealing with problems in the tax system. And yes, our personal tax plan goes first to provide relief to those on low and middle income earners. But in steps 2 and 3 of that plan, it begins the work of dealing with problems in our tax system, which is the problem of bracket creep.
No, it doesn't.
Because if you don't deal with bracket creep, as people's incomes creep up, they get taxed more and more and more, and that puts a stymie on aspiration and their incentive to get ahead.
Okay, he's pretending that if you go over the bracket, you're suddenly paying more tax on the bit below that bracket, which is not how our tax system works.
That's hardly a millionaire, Mr. Speaker. And it goes from 90 to 120,000. Also, hardly a millionaire.
Okay, neither of those match the wage increases. Those are not... The amounts that they've just increased, the thresholds, have nothing to do with how ordinary wages are growing. And what it's actually doing is adding a whole lot of people from who are currently in a higher tax bracket because they're earning more into a lower tax bracket, not because of bracket creep. If you wanted to fix bracket creep, it'd be really easy. You would simply have the threshold at which the various tax rates kick in. You would decide that, I don't know, that this percentile is supposed to be paying this tax rate on this amount of income. From this amount to this amount, you should be paying this much.
Yes.
But have that linked to CPI. Have that linked to... You could have that indexed. There's plenty of government payments and rates and so forth and tax thresholds that are indexed. You can just do that. That would fix bracket creep. You don't have to give this giant tax cut and remove entire tax brackets. The flattening of a tax bracket, so somebody on 40... The income from 40 to 200,000 is taxed at the same rate.
Yes.
You don't need to... Flattening the tax brackets is a way of giving more money to the rich. It's not
Exactly. That doesn't actually help the person on 40,000, and that doesn't make the person on 40,000 less likely to want to earn 60,000 or more likely to want to earn 60,000.
No. It's a nonsense excuse. And of course, the reason why they haven't done that is because they want the option in the future of using bracket creep to fix the bottom line, like when they realize that they've actually spent too much and they're like, keep in mind that all of their projections on how this is about where the median and average incomes are going to be during the life of this long-term tax plan. They're all based on their idea that wages are going to grow by 3.5%.
Yeah, where does that come from?
On some ludicrously optimistic projections that they've had Treasury produce. Now, keep in mind, Treasury is very much in their pocket at the moment. It's quite partisan in what it's doing.
Yes.
Hence all the stuff where they were like claiming that there was a $10 billion hole in Labor's costings because they were assuming that people weren't going to change their behaviour when they got rid of the cash bonus for owning shares. But Labor's figures were from the Parliamentary Budgetary Office.
Yes.
So those figures are neutral and the Parliamentary Budget Office does not work for one side. The Treasury ones, and the Treasury answered when Labor asked them about this, that these were just based on the assumptions and the framing of the question that the Treasurer had put to them. So it's that the Treasury has been quite political in when they...
Yes, they are. And it is quite a bit of a bias.
So I would trust the PBO over that in any case. All right. I want to, before we just leave Parliament on that day, so most of Parliament was Turnbull talking about how this was going to help aspirational voters and help them get ahead somehow. Wilkie asked this very pointed question about the fact that Centrelink is getting rid of, or earlier this year, it's now going to kick in, the bit where when you applied, when you eventually got paid, when you eventually were approved, it was backdated to when you applied.
Now it's not. It's just however long it takes, it just starts when you get approved.
So check out Wilkie asking Turnbull and Turnbull's complete non-answer I'll play it for you.
Speaker, my question is to the Prime Minister. Prime Minister, a whistleblower tells me that from 1 July, Centrelink will stop backdating payments to the intention to claim date. This is unacceptable because people needing Centrelink can initially be in crisis and unable to lodge the paperwork immediately. For example, women fleeing domestic violence. And when they do, the process can be convoluted with delays commonplace. This change would also appear to be illegal because Section 13 of the Social Security Administration Act 1999 clearly intends that a person is taken to have made a claim when they first contact Centrelink. Prime Minister, will you stop this unfair, unlawful and sneaky attack on the most vulnerable members of our community?
Hang on. Do you think that Turnbull goes, no, that's a good point. We don't really want to be starving the poor, particularly in
our absolutely. I think
money.
That is. I think
we've got all this cash. We can spend it on tax cuts. Of course, we're not going to try and.
And from everything I know, that is exactly what I think happens next.
It's going to be.
What?
I'm going to.
Am I going to be disappointed?
I'm going to be disappointed.
Oh.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank the honourable member for his question. The government
is
committed to ensuring more Australians find jobs, maximising their ability to support themselves and their families.
Don't see how that answers the question.
Unable to find work, we have a strong social welfare safety.
Which is just pointed out a giant hole in it.
We continue to guarantee that into the future because we've got a strong economy. The honourable member from Tasmania understands well how strong, how much stronger the Tasmanian economy has become because of the great Liberal leadership of Will Hodgman, supported by.
So why do you need to make Centrelink applicants starve? If that were true.
As unlawful and sneaky, the honourable member would recall that it was a policy change which was part of the Social Services Legislative Amendment Welfare Reform Bill, which was debated and passed by the Parliament in March this year. The honourable member didn't speak in the debate, but he did vote against it. The change is made in Schedule 11 of the bill, so it is both lawful and very transparent. And the rationale for the amendment.
Nothing more transparent than Schedule 11 of a bill.
That, of course, is available to everybody. So the deeming provisions were introduced at a time when claim forms were mailed to claimants, completed, and then returned to Centrelink by mail. With the progressive rollout of online claiming, those provisions are no longer necessary.
Because there's no delays in the online system, they're just instantaneous. Bullshit, Malcolm.
Paid attention to, the change was made.
That confused me, and I'm fairly across these things. Wow.
He's just saying, look, it happened, and it was in a bill earlier, and I'm going to ignore the problem that you're describing and just say, look, it happened. You weren't able to defeat it. Live with it.
Oh my goodness, that's horrible. That is absolutely horrible. And he's just saying, oh, people are unemployed and we're committed to helping people find jobs. But that's not what he's asking about. He's asking about people who are in crisis. He's asking about people who have left abusive partners, people who have found themselves homeless for one reason or another. He's asking about these people and they're like, oh, we're committed to helping people find jobs. We're committed to helping ensure people feel safe and have a roof over their head and have enough to eat and can care for themselves and their families. That's not what we want.
Well, the government's this whole line from the government and the media is that we're handing out free cash. You know, you're getting something. We know who's not getting anything. The millions of Australians who are in Newstart, who are on pension, who don't have enough income to be paying tax in the first place,
yep.
Who are living in abject poverty.
Yes.
This is not an equitable way of giving of supporting them because they don't get a cent. Their expenses keep going up. But they don't get a cent from it.
That's horrible.
So, all right. Before we drop the tax cut thing, we need to talk about what are we going to... What can people say? Because there's a lot of... This is how it's being reported. So, I'll just... One at random. This is how Channel 10 reported on the day that it happened.
Good evening. For the Prime Minister, it's one of his biggest political victories. For Australians, it's a long-awaited financial windfall.
Not for many Australians.
Has managed to get his controversial tax cuts through the Parliament and outsmarting Labor along the
way.
Jonathan Lee joins us now live from Canberra. Jono, this is no doubt particularly damaging for Bill Shorten.
It certainly is, Georgie. Labor really tried to delay the proceedings, to debate them. The government sped them up by guillotining debate, but in the end, this was about the crossbenchers who didn't want to stand in the way of the struggling families and struggling workers receiving a genuine tax cut. It is, though, the largest reform
of
its type in a generation. Okay. It also says a lot about our national debate that many people believe this $144 billion should instead be used to pay down our massive debt.
Or pay for services.
It was a race to the finish line for the Prime Minister to pass the bill before his backers changed their minds. Last year, the government claimed it needed to raise revenue through a Medicare levy and bank tax. Now the government says it has so much money, it's cutting $144 billion from the bottom line in three stages over the next decade, calling it
a massive win for hard-working Australian families.
Rage spewed from early morning.
The mic's off.
Speed.
The mic's off.
As the government rejected attempts to split its income tax plan in half, sending it straight back to the Senate.
Speaker, I move that the amendments be disagreed to.
They won't even allow a single speech from the Shadow Treasurer.
This is supposed to be one of the centrepieces of your economic plan. You don't even have the spine to debate it properly.
This is $140 billion being ripped out of essential public services, and you want to ram it through the Senate. The government guillotine debate time and time again, keeping its legislation firmly locked in a straitjacket.
I've now been given 5 minutes after a fight, 5 minutes on a bill for $144 billion.
Overnight, it secured the four key votes of the One Nation Party and Centre Alliance, formerly Nick Xenophon's team, who, despite disagreeing with the tax cuts for the wealthy, won't stand in the way of money for battlers.
Those people on those incomes, they are now going to get some relief.
No, the people on most incomes will see nothing. Voted
in the hope Labor will change it down the track.
Stage 3 does not come into play until 2024. That's 6 years away.
They have no idea in the next 7 years if the nation can afford this.
The government maintains it can afford it, arguing even with the tax cuts, there's still more money coming into the coffers. There's also an election to win.
It is fair, it's comprehensive, it is well thought out.
When the backslapping subsides, all eyes will turn to the big business tax cut and the very same crossbenches it needs to support it. And clearly Malcolm Turnbull will be crowing tonight to his party that he's the best man to lead his team to the next election. There's also a slew of by-elections coming up, don't forget, where Malcolm Turnbull...
But there's a reason why I'm still playing this, just the commentary about it.
Bill Shorten's in a very tough position now. He, in effect, has to campaign that his party wants to repeal this tax cut. That's not easy to sell in the lead-up to an election, Georgie.
Thank you, John.
Well, not given the commercial media being so far behind the tax cuts, because you could also say, if it was being run properly, Turnbull will have a difficult job selling what it is that he's going to cut to pay for it.
You could say that.
So,
but it would be nice if they focused on that. It would be nice if they brought that up. It would be nice if when they were contextualizing it in the beginning, they weren't saying, you know, they did say that Turnbull guillotined thing, but they also said that Shorten was trying to draw out debate and make it long. Like, it's all about the way they sell it.
Oh, they framed it as long-awaited tax relief, like this phrase tax relief, like we're being oppressed by tax.
And I find it very interesting that Ms. Hanson will one day talk about, you know, the poor Australian making barely any money and how we're going to give money back to them, and the next day we'll vote to ensure that we take more money from that poor Australian by ensuring that they're paying their hex debt back earlier when they barely make enough to live.
Yeah, but she means poor Australians who don't have... Her supporters tend not to have... Call me an elitist, but it's almost like a university education might inure yourself against some of the shit from Hanson.
Not necessarily.
I think her pitch is that she's assuming that her voters resent people who've been to university. That's the elite attack and all the rest of it.
Fair enough.
Because, yeah, no, he was right. If she's representing poor people, but she doesn't. If she was genuinely representing poor people,
yes,
then the poor people who have hex debts, she wouldn't be trying to squeeze them.
Absolutely.
All right, so given that that is how this is framed to the swinging voters, how do you reckon we actually, and I think you've had a thought about this, what do we, like, in terms of what we can do about it, when talking to friends and family and people who are like, oh, well, you know, a bit of extra cash sounds good. Like, how do you reckon, what do you reckon is the best way of explaining to them how they're being screwed and robbed?
I think pointing out that it may be a tiny bit of extra cash, but it is only a tiny bit of extra cash, and that at what cost does it come? How are they going to pay for this? How are they going to balance that out? What are they going to cut? What services are they going to cut? What services that we need are they going to cut? And I think that's a big thing that we don't know. I also think the idea that there's this initial amount where, you know, it might help you and it might help people on median incomes, but as it goes on, it helps those people less and less. And all it does is really help the people in the highest brackets later on.
Which I suppose is, I mean, that's their aspiration line. And it's how they get, the American right gets very poor people to vote for the Republican Party. And it's on this whole idea of, well, sure, if we give a lot of money to the rich, but maybe one day you'll be rich.
Not necessarily true. They also vote against social conservatism.
Yeah, I mean, that's the main
piece. Social conservatism
huge. There's also this sense of, like, appealing to people's hope that one day that will be them.
I think absolutely. And I think that hope is built into our society, and I think it's a fairly integral thing, and I think it's a dangerous thing because
most people will vote for stuff that actually makes it harder for them to progress. Like, if a thing is making it, your income's going to be lower overall. Like, mm-hmm. your wage rises are going to be smaller. Your unions are weaker. So the schooling for your children, because if you're poor, hell, if you're not obscenely wealthy, you're not sending your kids to a private school.
You're sending kids to a public school, which is now getting less funding. There's all sorts of things.
There's lots of ways that they will make you pay for it, which ultimately makes it less likely that you or your children will advance to those. Will be able to. It's not a matter of aspiring. Like, it's very kind of Malcolm Turnbull to say we want people to be able to dream. But what I'm more concerned about is what are they doing to actually help people realize
those
dreams?
But they're not. They're not helping people realize those dreams. No. They're basically pitting people who are doing things to try to realize those dreams, whether that be, you know, going to university or doing something else. It's interesting. One of my friends said this morning that they were really tired of it. Like, they were tired of being outraged, that they were tired of being upset about all that's going on. And I think that's one of the things they're counting on. I think they're counting on the fact that we are tired, we are exhausted. There's so many bad things happening. We're treating refugees horribly. We look at the news and we see the things Trump is doing to refugees. We see what's happening in America with women's reproductive rights. We see what's happening here with our own health system. And we just get tired. And it's really hard to keep up that idea that you're still frustrated. I think it's really hard. I don't know how to address it other than to say that that's what they count on, and to try and fight against it, to take time out that when you need it, but to call your member and to talk to them and to vote and to,
well, except for if they're our local member, who's Michael Sooker, who is definitely advocating behind the scenes to make the Liberals worse.
Mm.
Can I make a suggestion on that? The reason why we have outrage fatigue is because they figure that they've already lost. People are going to be outraged. They've already lost them. So, you know, it doesn't hurt. They might as well try for all of the things at the same time. Can I suggest that maybe there is a way that we should look at that, which is each thing they do that is outrageous, and they're all slightly different. So it might be brutally mistreating refugees. The thing at the moment where the refugee who committed suicide despite lots of warnings that was going to happen, they won't even let his mother bury him, like take him somewhere. Mm. The refugee who needs an abortion, so there are a couple, actually we'll get to those things in Australia vs. Humanity, but there's those issues, there's the tax issues, there's the funding cuts to all these things. But the thing is, for them to lose office, what we need is not, obviously we lefties are all going to be voting against them anyway. What we need is for the swing voters to move. Maybe the way we do this is we use these things as ammunition to help persuade the swing voters that this government is not acting in their interests. Mm. And rather than these things just being things that are grinding us down, each of them are a different angle to appeal to different swing voters who haven't yet turned on the government.
Yeah.
So maybe what we do is we sort of keep a track of them and find the people basically they're all different avenues that we could use to persuade people who haven't yet. Because somebody who doesn't care about, you know, Newstart being cruel,
yeah,
might be a person who cares about the fact that we're locking children in cages. It's not just the difference between us and the Americans is
very slim.
Well, it's that their media is actually aware of it, whereas ours is like covering it up.
Our media is aware of it; they're just not allowed anywhere near it, and so have started ignoring it.
Yeah, so maybe that's the approach. It's not outrage fatigue in the sense that. Because we're not the people who are going to be changing our votes at this point.
No.
But these are things that we can rely on, and quite logically and justifiably. It feels like maybe that's the way we could do it. So look, let's move on. There are a couple of other things we want to talk about. The tax cuts. The other thing that was going to happen was the corporate tax cuts. They've been now set off to when Parliament returns in August. The government tried to make a bit of hay out of Shorten, saying we're going to be getting rid of the tax cuts for businesses with $10 to $50 million of turnover, which is not most businesses. And then there's a question about from $2 to $10 million, and Shorten sort of did captain's call without caucus doing it. And then the Libs tried to make hay out of that, and they also tried to make hay out of Albo.
But he's come back on that today. He's said this morning that they wouldn't repeal those.
They won't repeal which ones?
$2 to $10 to $50 million.
Wait, they're not repealing the company tax at all?
This has just come out. Well, apparently at 12:22 today, he's come back and he's sort of hedging what he said on Tuesday a bit, in that he didn't want to confuse anything. He didn't want to cause uncertainty for business. But it looked like maybe they would maintain the status quo. So if the tax cuts went through, they would let them stay.
Well, that's depressing and other reasons to vote for the Greens.
Yes.
Because originally on Tuesday, his position was, look, we're reviewing the $2 to $10 million turnover tax cuts because we're waiting for the costing from the PBO, but 10 to 50 is definitely not small or medium build business, and so
definitely not.
But again, like, the tax cuts are fundamentally the right-wing philosophy, which is...
It's reward your friends.
It's the reason why they're in politics. That's what they're there because they don't like paying money. It's one of the things that energizes people to become liberal MPs in the first place when they first get a bloody tax bill and they're like, why am I paying money for stuff I don't use? Because you want to live in a civil society where we don't have to drive around in an armored car, basically.
Exactly.
Anyway, all right.
You don't drive down my street, but I'm fairly sure that tax money that you paid at some point went into the sewerage system beneath it and the asphalt on it and all of that sort of thing.
Well, I think those are the one thing. Those are the things that conservatives don't mind government paying for. What they do mind government paying for is stuff that goes to other people.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, social assistance.
Yeah, the idea that poor people aren't starving on the streets outside. That needs to be shut down. Poor people, I shouldn't be supporting poor people. Or if I do, it should be just at my own discretion. That's the thinking. All right, so that discussion there is the one covering the tax cuts and the HECS. Now, there are a number of other things on my list of things that I wanted to talk about this week, including the ABC and the Libs voting to privatise it, and then the government saying, no, we won't do that.
We never did that. What are you talking about? That was my favourite, the them coming out and saying, no, that's not our policy.
Which I feel going, that's not... I mean, I was there at the meeting where we were talking, where they voted for it. Dutton coming out and declaring that Australians need to be on their guard against compassion.
Oh, we need to redefine compassion, because compassion will hurt us and it'll be dangerous and people...
Not redefine it. Compassion is a weakness. Oh, like, God. We have the conservatives out there declaring that they're at war with compassion. Like, that made it really clear. We've got the government versus whistleblowers, where they've charged when the whistleblower revealed that Australia was bugging the East Timorese in the negotiations about where the shelf was going to be drawn. Like, completely outrageous that Australia was doing that under the Howard government. And this week the government has charged the whistleblower with a criminal offence and the lawyer. We need to talk about those. We need to talk about the fact that Australia is currently is going to deport a mother from her child this week. And then there's a couple of stupid little things that I want to talk about, which include David Lainhelm shouting out to Sarah Hanson-Young in a discussion about domestic violence.
God.
Shouting out at her that she should stop shagging men.
Well, you know, if you think men are the perpetrators, then maybe don't shag them.
What's his response today? Like, he hasn't actually backed out.
No. What he came back and said was that if it offended her, that's her problem.
He told her to fuck off originally.
Yeah, and I'm prepared to rephrase my comments. I strongly urge Senator Hanson-Young to continue shagging men as she pleases.
Oh, God, they're revolting. I also want to talk about the weird war from the Nationals against that vegetarian mince that's come out, which they think is traitorous, but I'll come back to that. And also, on the subject of religion, the Greens have actually moved a motion now for a Senate inquiry into an alternative. So it's like, do you know, at the moment, every day of Parliament starts with the Christian Lord's Prayer. Like, that should be insulting to Christians. They're making all parliamentarians just read this thing out without any meaning, without believing in it. Just this rote declaration of the Christian faith, which they don't hold. Like, they're getting people to pretend and be fake Christians. Like, I don't know why they want that. The Greens are proposing that instead it say, Senators, let us in silence pray or reflect upon our responsibilities to all people of Australia and to future generations, which seems to me to be reasonable. It'd be better if we didn't say pray at all, but anyway. So look, there's a bunch of things that we need to talk about. I think we're going to do them in a supplementary episode because, frankly, this one is already significant in size. And so we'll come back when we all have more energy, but I will upload this episode. So thank you very much, Denise, for coming back and discussing what is it seems to me one of the most fundamental things. This is the ratchet.
Oh, it really is.
This is where this is the stuff that will change Australia. They are flattening the tax. So we will have these huge, the cuts are going to be massive. They are really going to hurt people to pay for this.
Well, that's the thing. Like, they are. And the fact that they continue over the next few years, the fact that, yeah, we don't know what services they're going to affect. And they're going to have to affect services because, you know, we're not going to...
Where's the money coming from? Yeah. This is all they've got a temporary revenue. Like when Costello cut it out, took the mining boom. Like, the Labor
Party... Rather than taking the mining boom money and, like, socking it away and investing in our infrastructure and doing those things with it, they did these tax cuts to reward the rich.
That are still costing the budget. 50, 60 billion dollars a year, another reason we have a deficit. Yeah. And it's the scary thing is that it turns out to be almost impossible, particularly given the commercial media are fundamentally opposed to the idea of ever-increasing tax.
Yeah. Once you lock them in, you can't step them back. That's so, so hard.
Because they just suddenly it becomes a tax increase and it's an attack on you. And once people have the money, it's really hard to take it back.
It is.
For the public services. Like, so this is terrifying. This is this is a huge change to the future of our country.
Yes.
Obviously, the best at the moment would be if people recognise how bad that is and encourage Labor to actually get back in and reverse it. Maybe, you know, that's the aspiration I'm keen on. I want Labor to aspire to undo the damage.
Yeah.
But, and obviously what we're pointing out, like, I think that needs to be the refrain. Like, where is the money coming from? What are they going to cut? But anyway, we'll come back and we'll discuss the other things later. Thank you for joining me on this very, very depressing but also important discussion.
My pleasure.
And we'll see all of you for a further part of this podcast.
In a few days.
In a few days. When we've recovered. All right, see you soon. Bye.
Bye.